morning. I'm your host, Mallory Mercer, and today I'm sitting down to speak with Joanna Candell from the Alliance. Good morning, Joanna. How are you?
Good morning, Mallory. I am doing really well. Thank you so much for having me here this morning.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure. So tell me about yourself. Tell me about the Alliance. You know, we're not very familiar with your organization, so why don't you start with that?
Absolutely. So again, my name is Joanna. I'm the founder and CEO of the National Alliance for Eating Disorders, also known as the Alliance. We are the leading national nonprofit organization that provides education, referrals, and support to all individuals, as well as their loved ones that are experiencing and recovering from all types of eating disorders. So we like to be a really good conduit for education, connection to care, and support for living a life beyond eating disorders. I came to this work as a human of lived experience. So I did struggle with an eating disorder for over a decade. I am someone who struggled with various eating disorders, as a lot of people that will struggle. They tend to struggle with more than one. And, you know, during my experience, I realized how many things could have happened differently to create maybe a different experience and outcome. Meaning, I know how much privilege I held during my experience with my eating disorder, being definitely what you consider of who develops an eating disorder and what they look like. And unfortunately, that archaic stereotype often is the biggest roadblock for individuals being identified, having any intervention, and having access to care. And so I really used my experience as, well, almost like the blueprint of what I wanted the Alliance to do. And, you know, I took out a loan the last year of undergrad when I was in college and moved back home to South Florida and started this little grassroots organization and was a fierce party of one for several years and continued to work three jobs to keep this organization going. Because this really was my passion. I nearly lost my life several times and unfortunately have known many other people that have lost their life as a direct result of their eating disorder. And my North Star has always been not one more and not one more person, you know, losing their life, not one more moment lost, not one more, you know, laugh and memory stolen. And so, you know, fast forward all these years later, and now we are the leader in this space and are able to offer, you know, connection to care and support to people in all 50 states in the country and countries around the world as well.
That is so inspiring. And I'm so grateful for your honesty in this space, but I'm thankful for your perseverance. I know that probably was so difficult so many days and it would have been easier to stop on your mission. So I'm just thankful for your voice and for your experience. And it's so powerful coming from someone with a lived experience. So you touched on education a little bit. Will you tell us how exactly you work to educate and support not only your local community, but the national community on eating disorders?
Yeah, absolutely. So unfortunately, there's very few healthcare providers, even less medical providers, that are given the opportunity to be educated on eating disorders. In fact, we believe that less than 6% of all medical residency programs even offers any information on eating disorders. And when you look at the information, right, that one in every nine individuals in this country will experience an eating disorder at some point. So we're talking about like 9% of our population, as well as the lethality rate of eating disorders, that every 52 minutes, someone dies as a direct result of their eating disorder in this country, making it the second highest death rate of all psychiatric disorders. There's a really big void, actually, if you will, because, you know, I think that a lot of people have this understanding about what eating disorders are, that they happen to young, female identifying, you know, younger girls that, you know, just want to fit in and just want to look good. When we know that eating disorders are actually serious mental illness, we know that they're a biopsychosocial illness, that they're not a disorder of choice. And so what we like to do is we like to sort of come in and really give enough information for recognition to happen and referrals. So almost that primary intervention. So we do a lot of work with doctors, nurses, dentists, teachers, like guidance counselors on just the signs to look for and where to refer out. So we do a lot of virtual presentations. We, prior to the pandemic, a lot of boots on the ground. And we also have a very big informational website. So individuals that want more education or want more information can easily access it. And something that's really important to us is all of our education, all of our support groups, all of our referrals are all free of charge because we never want costs to be a barrier for individuals to get the information, help, and support that they need.
That data is alarming to me. And, you know, I think I would love to know, I want to backtrack a little bit. When you go into these clinics and you're starting to educate people, are you finding that many of them are not recognizing eating disorders as mental illness?
Oh, 1,000,000%. And I really appreciate you bringing that up. And I definitely want to hold space for the fact that this is not their fault. This is, I mean, you don't know what you don't know. And for example, when a physician is going to medical school and going like through, you know, residency, like medical school is actually 2 out of the 4 years. And then the last 2 years of medical school are clinicals. And then you go into residencies. So if you're not being educated to look for this, then you're not going to be able to recognize it. And so the majority of people that are experiencing eating disorders do not look like they're experiencing eating disorders. In fact, only 6% of all people that have eating disorders are medically underweight. So like that stereotypical image of what we think. So oftentimes someone can look quote unquote perfectly healthy, but can be dying on the inside from an eating disorder. So unfortunately, you know, someone who's male identifying, someone who lives life in a much higher weight body, someone who is from the BIPOC community, someone who's from the queer community that comes in, automatically we are not assessing them for a possible eating disorder. And so they're going to end up leaving their medical office or healthcare office without any type of intervention. So that's really where our focus is let's start arming you with information. Let's hope that you stop doing harm, because we know that there's a lot of, you know, fat phobia, medical bias around people that live life in higher weight bodies. And let's give you really great information so that we can get these people that are struggling in so much isolation and loneliness into the offices, community programs, and treatment centers that can save their life.
That's incredible. And I think that it'd be really wonderful for us to share on our website a link to what to look for and the different types of eating disorders that can present themselves. Because like you said, I think there's so much stigma on what is the normal body to have and what are the normal signs to look for. And that's just obviously not the case, which thank you for educating me as well on that. Can you tell us, how can people get connected to the Alliance if they're not in the Florida area?
Yeah, absolutely. So being a national organization, you can very, very easily connect to us through our website, which is allianceforeatingdisorders.com. We have very active social networks. We also have the largest comprehensive and robust referral network. It's called findedhelp.com. So find eating disorder help, but edhelp.com. You can go in that and literally put everything from your zip code to what eating disorder you're experiencing to what kind of insurance. And it could actually give you names of providers and treatment centers that take your insurance, that work with your type of eating disorder. And if, for example, you have a comorbidity, like if you're experiencing an eating disorder and substance use, or an eating disorder and depression or trauma, because we always say that eating disorders don't happen in silos. They're never alone. So you always see a co-occurrence of depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, personality disorders, obsessive compulsive disorders, substance use disorders. You always see it because eating disorders, like many other like substance use disorders, are maladaptive coping mechanisms, right? It's what people do to stay afloat when everything else is going on. So please reach out to the Alliance via our website, via our social networks. And also we have an amazing group of licensed and specialized providers that staff our helpline. So you can call and talk to someone and connect. And our toll-free number is 866-662-1235. And we're here to just support you and your loved ones on this journey.
Thank you for those resources. And those will be in our resource notes. So speaking of those resources, from your own experience, when is it time to get help? And, you know, going about this, do you recommend first going to loved ones and family members or to these resources?
So I think the line, you know, and people ask me all the time, well, what's the difference between disordered eating and an eating disorder? And for me, my difference is when you can stop, when you no longer can do life effectively, when it's literally permeating in every part of your life. And what I mean by that is, you know, when I was very active in my eating disorder, it was the first thing I thought of every morning, the last thing I thought of every night, and every other thought in between. It really was at the driver's seat of that car of my life, where
where it would hold me back from going to social gatherings. You know, I would, for example, change my clothes 35 times because I was so uncomfortable in the body that I lived in. I was noticing that I wasn't being so truthful with the people around me. I would be canceling plans. And so I would say is take a look at how is it affecting your life? Like, are you still able to show up and to do all the things, or is it becoming harder? I'm always in the belief system that prior to, like, if you see a loved one that's clearly exhibiting signs, and again, we have all of those on our website. So please feel free to, you know, check out our site, is to reach out for resources. We have really good ways of like what to say, what not to say. It's always better to have those resources prior to you having that conversation with a loved one. And when you do choose to have the conversation with your loved one, make sure to come at it with, which I'm sure you will anyways, with love, care, and compassion. So using I statements as opposed to you, having it just be you and that person, you know, and just coming at it with curiosity and concern. No one's ever going to be mad at you. Well, I should probably say it's unlikely that people will be mad at you if you come up sharing your feelings and how you feel. You know, I'm really worried. I'm really concerned. I love you. And I've noticed. So a lot of the eyes, as opposed to what are you doing? You know, I see that you're not eating or you're overeating or this or that, that wall is going to go up. So come at it with care, compassion, and kindness.
Thank you so much for that. Sometimes it's so hard to remember when you're concerned about somebody that they're a person and, you know, you can do more harm than good sometimes. So I will also link those resources for our listeners. But, you know, you talked about the comorbidity of eating disorders and other mental illnesses. So I want to touch on research for eating disorders and the importance of that. Do you see much research for eating disorders?
Thank you so much for asking that question. Historically, absolutely not. In fact, up until several years ago, the NIMH gave eating disorders about $30 million a year. So that is just in retrospect, with about 30 million people in this country, or 30 million individuals that will experience an eating disorder in their lifetime, we're talking about literally $1 per person of research dollars. So virtually nothing. And, you know, through the work of the Eating Disorders Coalition, which is our advocacy branch on Capitol Hill, and through some amazing champions on the Hill, we've been able to add a little bit of funds to that pot, but nowhere near the amount of money that we need. And again, like, and I think that can be very frustrating for someone. Like, we get calls all the time from college students or high school students that are writing papers, and they're like, is there any newer research? Like, the data that we're seeing is from 1999 and I wasn't even alive then. And I'm like, great, you know, but that's what we're seeing a lot. So we definitely need so much more research funding because there's so much that we don't know. There's some incredible funding some incredible research that's coming out that's looking at the connection between gut health and eating disorders. There's more like research coming out about, you know, eating disorders in the military that we know have high rates of eating disorders. And yet we have so far to go. We need to make sure that all individuals that have eating disorders are represented in this research, that, you know, we're doing more research on binge eating disorder. We're doing more research on marginalized communities. We're doing more research on food insecurity and eating disorders. So things that are not what you see typically. We need to be not only looking at, you know, research around anorexia nervosa, we need to be looking at all of the eating disorders. So we definitely are moving the needle forward and we have so much further to go.
Thank you for advocating, one, for research, but two, for all the different indications that we may see, because like you said, we have to be representative of this population that we're working with. So if any of our research listeners out there are either getting involved in eating disorder research or want to be involved, please reach out to Joanna and the Alliance. I'm sure she'd be happy to speak with you, because at the end of the day, we are all here to come together to serve those living with eating disorders. And I hope one day that we live in a world where there's so much research when people are curious and they are able to have that opportunity to learn more. One last question, Joanna. In all of your years of experience, what would one thing be that you want the public to know about eating disorders?
Oh, man. I think it's going to be hard to whittle it down to one. I think that eating disorders are not a disorder of choice or vanity, that they are significant mental illness that deserve and need access to care. I think that would probably be my number one, meaning that, you know, so many times in my experience and so many people that I've worked with, you know, the answer that they get a lot of time is just start eating or just stop eating, or, you know, if you wanted recovery enough, you would do it. And Mallory, you would never say that to someone who has a broken arm or who has cancer or who has diabetes. It's almost like telling someone that has a broken arm, if you will it enough, it will melt, it will heal. And so if you are currently experiencing an eating disorder, please know that this is not for you to fix on your own, that you are worthy and deserving of treatment. And unfortunately, I want to be the first person to say that, you know, only 1 in 3 people that experience eating disorders will ever have access to care. So we need to do better. We need to continue to use our voice. We need to advocate, because you are deserving and you do deserve and need to get that access to care. And the last thing that I would just say to that is, you know, if you are experiencing an eating disorder, please know that complete recovery is possible. Whether you use the word in recovery, recovered, recovering, healing, living beyond, please know that it gets better. You are not the exception to the rule. That my journey to recovery, my recovery process was the hardest thing that I ever did. And yet it is without a doubt, like, the best thing I ever did, because although you don't recover to utopia, you recover to life, and life is not always sunshine, bunnies, and rainbows. There's some extraordinary moments, and I know it's scary, but know that you're not alone, that there is an amazing community out there. We have free weekly virtual support groups for individuals that are experiencing eating disorders and their loved ones. And you are surrounded by a community of people that speak your language, a space where you are seen and heard, and a reminder that you don't have to go through this alone. So I know that wasn't one, but you know, that you are deserving of treatment and that there is hope, and hold on to that hope because it does get better.
Thank you so much. I don't know how I ever expect someone to sum up their passion and their life's work with one phrase. So that was incredible. And I just am so appreciative of your time, your openness, and your willingness to talk to us and to, you know, ask for help, ask for research. We are just so thankful for you. And I hope that we'll be able to sit down and talk with you again on another podcast, because I feel like I have so many more questions and I've just barely scraped the surface with you. So thank you so much, Joanna. If any of our listeners have any specific questions for Joanna, you can email me at mallory@thestar2rs.org. Put in the subject line, ask Joanna. I will send those directly to her and get back to you. But thank you so much, Joanna. Keep fighting the good fight.
Thank you so much.